Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am Dave Schrader, and we'll be taking your phone calls for the next hour. If you found out you were living in a haunted house, would you stay or would you go? It's so easy for us on the outside to say, just get out. Why wouldn't you just get out? But I'm curious what our listeners out there think. And would you knowingly buy a haunted house, especially if you had kids? Would you go into that atmosphere? I'm curious what the listeners have to say. Julio on the wild card line in El Centro, California. Welcome to Coast.
Hello?
Yes, Julio.
Yeah, actually, it's Julia. But
Julia, sorry. How are you this evening, Julia?
I'm good, thank you. No, I'm just calling since we're on the subject about demons and stuff. And I had a demonic experience when I was younger that I just wanted to share.
Please, go ahead.
One night I got up, used the restroom, came back to bed, laid down, and I heard like heavy breathing and I felt movement on the bed. So I opened my eyes. And when I did, I saw this like ugly little creature like running alongside of me on the bed. And I was just frozen. It was, you know, very incredibly scary. And I just, you know, laid there and finally it stopped like near my head. And it had a horrible long tongue that was just like still running alongside of me. And I finally stood up and I still stared at the bed and it was still there. And then I just ran to my mom's room and laid down.
That is bizarre. That's a strange tale. Reminds me, there's a book I read that really disturbed me. It's House of Spirits and Whispers by Annie Wilder, and she talks about her haunted house that she had to deal with, and the upstairs with the children's room. She had spent some time sleeping in there, and she would have these moments of sleep paralysis, but she would see the shadow man in her room. And the one evening she woke up and she felt it crawl into bed with her and put its tongue into her ear, which takes you out of the realm of just sleep paralysis and possible physiological deals. She could feel this taking place, the pressure of the body pressing against her, the feel of the sticky wet tongue going in her ear. Oh, truly one of those moments that I read that book and I had to stop and just look around my room. It was so frightening. Again, that's House of Spirits and Whispers by Annie Wilder. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got calls lining up. Joe, east of the Rockies in Massachusetts, you're next on Coast to Coast AM. We're taking your phone calls tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to east of the Rockies, Joe in Massachusetts. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hello, Dave. What a great show tonight. I really enjoyed the listening to that with Bob Cranmer. Would I live in a haunted house?
Yeah, what would you do? Would you move into it knowing that it's a haunted house?
Yes, but how long I would stay there is another question entirely. I mean, I've always loved supernatural and horror and things like that. And, you know, I've always wondered about such things and also like UFO sightings. It's like, why can't I see any of this evidence for myself?
You know, there's actually,
you know,
parts
if I actually did see it, I would probably be scared to death, I imagine.
There's places, I guess, throughout New Orleans and throughout Louisiana where the realtors actually have on the signs haunted or not haunted, that they put out these exclamations so people can go in and buy. And I don't know if that's because of the advent of all the different paranormal programming and people having an active interest in trying to own these homes, or if they're under some kind of law in Louisiana where they have to disclose this that way. But it's intriguing, and there does seem to be a bigger, broader interest in people moving in. If you had kids, would you buy a house that you knew was haunted?
I would say no. I don't have any kids, but if I did, I would definitely want to protect them.
Yeah, you got to be a little bit more careful when it comes to that. Have you ever had any experiences with the paranormal? Have you had any experiences with the paranormal yourself?
No, but I tell you, one night, I guess you might call it night terrors, where I woke up screaming at the top of my lungs. And my roommate came in and said, Joe, what are you doing? What's wrong? And I said, I must have had this, you know, horrifying nightmare, but I couldn't remember what it was. And she calmed me down and she left the room. And I remember after that trying to go back to sleep. throughout my whole body, I just had such an incredible feeling of terror like I've never felt before. I was so scared. I was almost in a fetal position going crazy. It was awful.
Right, and just no idea exactly what it was that was causing this kind of anxiety or panic attack?
No, I couldn't remember one thing about the dream, but I woke up screaming like that and afterwards feeling terrified. I can't describe how terrifying I felt.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for calling and being a part of the show this evening. I'm glad you enjoyed it. All right, let's go to the wild card line. Eric in Connecticut, welcome to Coast AM.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Certainly.
Hey, I have a question, and then I'll answer yours. I work the midnight shift. I'm actually a police officer, and I kind of got into this routine for, the last 13, 14 years. At the start of every month, I go to every room in the house and hit holy water on the walls and make the sign of the cross, kind of just say a quick prayer or whatever, just to kind of bless my family. And lately, it seems like, I don't know, maybe I sent something in the house or whatever, and I'm wondering if maybe I've opened myself up to something because I started doing this. Because, you know, I've heard stories that you're susceptible if you think about it, you're opening yourself up. Is that true or no, or do you think?
It depends, I guess, in what the nature is that you're doing. That which we focus on, we seem to draw, right? The law of attraction. And many people have changed the way that the paradigm is. It's, you know, don't focus on I need money, because then you're still kind of accepting the fact that you don't have it right now. So what they want you to do is focus on what your life is like with money, you know, fake it till you make it, as though you're imagining yourself already in that place. So maybe by going in with the intent and fear that you're protecting your family, maybe that could stir something up. I guess maybe it'd be in the way that you go about clearing your house and do these blessings. If you're just doing it in like you would do a maintenance for a car, you're just going in for an oil change and you don't show that fear, you don't put out that intention, I don't think it should affect you. Once we open that door and we start to investigate and it knows that we have an interest, does it seem to draw to us? Certainly. The one thing I would say to you though, Eric, is like, you know, any good police officer, you don't jump to conclusions. Sometimes these spirits or energies that people think are evil, maybe that's just the only way they can get your attention. They knock the plate off the wall, they bang on the wall. It wasn't because they're evil or trying to frighten you. Maybe that's all the energy that they had to get your attention. So a lot of times, the experts in the field that deal with clearing will say sometimes simply by stating your intention in your house and saying, you are not welcome, do not bother my children, do not bother this. And that's what I've lived by for years in my house, being an investigator, going out and helping people that are in positions that they're uncomfortable in. When I come home, I say, if there's anything here, you're welcome to interact with me and me alone. You do not bother my children and leave me alone when I'm in the bathroom. And that's pretty much the only rules I have in my house when it comes to the supernatural. So I think by setting the intention for yourself, that may help keep things away. But again, if you're tuning in and you're open to this and receptive, you may just be a little bit more aware of these surroundings and become a little bit more tuned in. Like, I'm sure as a police officer, you've experienced enough things that now you kind of get that little sixth sense. You know when a perpetrator is going to do something, or you know when you walk on the site of a crime scene, what to look for these triggers. And that may be kind of what's going on with the paranormal. As you become more acclimated to it, more aware of it, you're just becoming more open to seeing what's always been around you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And to answer your question, I do have kids, and there's no way I would knowingly go into to purchase a haunted house or occupy one. I wouldn't want to. I would stay away from it, definitely.
Eric, do you ever get calls as a police officer? And first of all, let me tell you, thank you very much for serving. I know that's a hell of a job in an underpaid and underrespected position. Do you get calls to homes where people say they hear footsteps in their attic or in the basement, and you go down and check and there's nothing there?
Absolutely. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we really just dismiss it as, you know, the person's maybe a little nutty. And, and it just, again, I mean, there's no evidence of it. And a lot of us, we don't really think of the paranormal. And to be honest with you, I really, since this has started happening with me, I think about it a little bit, but I try not to, because it's not something I really want to entertain. So, but in general, most police officers, we really just dismiss it and just, you know, and just, you know, we do what we need to do. We check to make sure, you know, put the person at peace, but we definitely don't try to, you know, say that it could be a ghost or whatever.
It's funny, you know, doing our show for the last 9 years with Darkness Radio, we've covered a lot of topics, and we have a huge contingent of police officers that listen to the show. They're out in their patrol cars driving around listening, and we were doing a topic on black-eyed kids and had a fascinating night and just really some chilling stories. And one of my favorite exchanges ever, Eric, was we got an email after, and one of the police officers local here in Minnesota said, listen, we love your show. We don't buy one word of it. I just don't buy the paranormal. My partner doesn't buy it. But we're listening to your show about black-eyed kids and laughing about these absurd, bizarre stories. And with about 15 minutes left in our show, over their radio, a call comes in from dispatch that says, we need somebody to go check. There's a lady that's reporting there are three children standing in their front yard that they don't know. And he said, without missing a beat, the two of them looked at each other and said, oh, hell no, and turned off their radio and refused to take that call. So it's funny that, you know, the police officers are so skeptical of this, but yet you get into their head with this kind of thing, and I could see how that would affect people.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's, you know, it's, again, something we don't really want to entertain because I'm sure it's, I wouldn't want to come across it, you know.
No doubt. Well, Eric, thank you again for serving and protecting. We appreciate the work that you do out there.
Thank you for your show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Let's go to wild card line. Les in Nebraska. Welcome to the show, Les. What's your story?
Yeah, your assessment is correct about the fear factor, but there's a little more to it than that. But with what I experienced here, it turns out a Vietnam vet had killed himself in the closet upstairs. And one of my daughters said that she'd always felt this shadow or cloud of suicide. And we got through all that, and then eventually we had people move in and rented the room, and they're very spiritual, and they picked up on it immediately. So we very quickly and easily dealt with it. And
well, you say quickly and easily. How do you, once you realize what's there, how do you go about ascertaining what to do then?
Well, it's real easy, because when I went to Israel, and I was actually at the spot where Jesus, and his real name is Yeshua, he kicked the demons out of the man into the pigs, and the pigs ran down a gradual slope into the water and killed themselves. It's funny, animals have the smarts to not take in the spirits, but we humans sometimes don't understand what we're dealing with. But it really is a simple matter of jurisdiction, and the policemen you were talking about there ought to understand this, the spiritual jurisdiction. And I learned a lot in Israel and also reading the Bible and getting away from religion and actually getting into the Word of God. The centurion soldier that came up to Yeshua and asked him to heal his daughter, he understood the jurisdiction spiritually, and he told Yeshua he didn't even have to see his daughter or lay his hands on her. Just by his spoken word, she was healed and the demonic presence was gone. And so I put it into practice here. I even seen one of those shadow people fly over my head one time out here. That was a trip. But the once again, the fear factor and the jurisdiction issue that, you know, when Yeshua died on the cross, he took the jurisdiction away from Satan of the world spiritually and gave it back to mankind. But mankind gives too much power over to the evil and to Satan without realizing it, because they're dealing with fear and all this stuff. But it's such a simple thing to deal with. It's all jurisdiction. It's spiritual laws. You don't need to have holy water. You don't need to do all these special things. That's all witchcraft. All you got to do is speak the name of Yeshua, the one that gave us back the power, and all this stuff can be dealt with. And if I had the money, I'd go buy a haunted house right now. I'd have it cleaned out in moments.
No
and
fear. All right.
It's not me. Yeshua would be the one that would be doing it, because he has the authority.
Thank you, Les. It's always good to hear another point. Let's go to wild card line. Dora in Jersey City, New Jersey. Dora, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. David, your guest a few minutes ago, he was talking about a tree near his house. But he didn't say too much, and that is what I want that he say. He didn't say, you remember when he said about an old tree?
Right, that there was a tree in his property where they'd planted that sapling because there were four bodies that had been four family members that had been skinned or killed and scalped and then buried in that plot.
Okay, I have two places. I rent two places in Hollywood in the 70s. My storage across Paramount Studio, Marathon Street. And years later, I found a house. They told me it was haunted, but I didn't care because we know about, in Cuba, we know about ghosts and all that. I really didn't care. For a year, nothing happened. The two places start going cuckoo was the day that Presley died. Elvis Presley,
sure.
The singer.
Mm-hmm.
You remember when he died?
Yes, I do.
Okay, in the 16th of August, those days, my two places went crazy. And the tree there, one time happened to me something, and whatever I have, it went right to the tree. It was a whole, 200 years eucalypt. You understand eucalypt?
No, I don't.
Eucalypt tree. They call eucalypt is 200 years. Well, whatever was happening in the house, I lost my storage. They blame me for the electricity. They give me 30 days. So Elvis died August. I lost my storage across Paramount in October. After have that for many years.
Well, I'm lost. Why do you think this kicked in when Elvis died? What did the king of...
Well, it was the same day. Same day. Look at my story. 6 weeks, I only have it. No more. And they blame me. After the owner, a year later, he wanted to shake hands with me. I suppose he was... whatever. Later, they found him dead. He killed himself with a monoxide of carbon. That is the building across Paramount Studio. But
okay.
I stay in my house. But a lot of things happen. Now, whatever happened there, follow me to Jersey too. You understand, David?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Presley even showed here in the basement of the house. The girl that was here was screaming, and I didn't know what happened. Maybe the washing machine. And I took her to the kitchen, and she said to me, Dora, don't think I am crazy. But in your chair downstairs, is sit down Elvis Presley. Okay? That is what I want to say. I want to know about the tree. The tree next to the house, it has a lot of to do. That is my story.
Well, Dora, thank you very much for calling and sharing your story. Interesting. It seems that the ghost of Elvis left her all shook up. We're going to take your phone calls and more when we return. My question to you is, would you move willingly into a haunted house? And would you do so if you had a child? I'm curious what your perspective on that would be. Also, exorcisms, exorcists, all of these movies are coming out. There's always a glut that happens to the churches after movies like this happen. Has there been a movie, a scary movie that's affected you and impacted you? Psycho keeping you from wanting to shower, Night of the Living Dead keeping you from wanting to go to the cemetery. Let me know what your thoughts are. Stay tuned. More Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. We're taking your phone calls this evening, and we're talking about the strange and supernatural. Would you live in a haunted house? What horror movies have affected you? Has there been a movie you saw that has kept you from doing certain things, changing parameters in your life? I can tell you this, the movie that affected me most, Night of the Living Dead. I cannot live within a mile of a cemetery or a funeral home. It just totally unnerves me. I watched that movie when I was about 11 years old with my dad. It's always had a weird impact on me. Let's go ahead and we'll take some calls right now. West of the Rockies, Bing, in Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dave. My one is I was on a trip. I was afoot here in Tucson. I was visiting my parents' grave, and I was saying goodbye. I'm going off another adventure. I gave a Native American Indian my word that when he died, to make sure that a bad thing didn't happen. And when I arrived at his place, about 300 miles northwest of Tucson, it was a Native American Indian cemetery. A guy who just like him had stuck a comb right where his head was, and I pulled it out, and I had my 60-pound pack, and I was thrown through the air about 12 or 15 feet, and I hit a conifer tree, and it knocked the wind out of me. And at my parents, the same thing had happened when I was on my way to the Northwest to see if this bad guy, this bad Indian, had stuck a comb where his head would be. And so, you know, and here I had a 60-pound pack, you know, hitchhiking up to the place. And I just before I left town, my parents was in the daytime around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. The Native American was right at dusk. And that was 2 days later. And part two is, can I address something that George has been talking about this year very briefly?
Certainly. Go ahead.
It's a hypothesis, you know, with all these chemtrails. What if the bad guys from possibly other planets or wherever are terraforming the Earth, our planet, a good mother Earth?
Very interesting. That could be a different perspective on the whole idea. Or, you know, I've often wondered with this as well. It's so easy to jump on the conspiracy bandwagon that whatever they're putting in the sky is there to hurt us. Maybe it is, in fact, a way for our government and the governments of the world to protect us, to shield us from things that may be coming at it. Could it be the cosmic rays? Could it be issues with the aliens? That's also something to take a look at. Thanks a lot for calling in and spending a little time with us, Bing. We'll take more phone calls and talk more with our listeners here on Coast to Coast AM right after this. Good evening. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. We're taking your phone calls. They're lining up and lighting up. Thank you for being a part of the show with us this evening. Let's go to the wild card line. Dana in Michigan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. You know, when you have subject matter like this, it brings out a lot of crazies. But I'm going to say something very seriously. Two things I wanted to address. When your guest was on, his name was Bob, correct?
Yes.
His first name? Okay. When Bob was on, he got two calls. One was from a man that said his daughter's seeing a shrink and he and his wife are separated. I'm not sure why Bob didn't ask him, but why, if he's still listening, why he hasn't contacted a priest is beyond me. I don't understand, unless it was a fraternity prank, because you get a lot of, you know, frat guys that call shows in the middle of the night. That was one issue. He needs to contact the Catholic priest. You do not have to be Catholic, you know, to get assistance. The other thing, there were two other things I wanted to address. There was a Roman Catholic. I am a Roman Catholic. A lifelong Roman Catholic. There was a man named Michael that called saying that he told politicians if they didn't do something that they wouldn't be reelected. Those are probably other influences. That has nothing to do with exorcism. This is a very serious thing. I was confirmed. You're confirmed in the Catholic Church if you're life born, baptized Catholic at 10 years old in fifth grade. You cannot... There aren't even all priests, bishops, and cardinals that can be exorcists. This is a very specialized field. For that man to say he could do it over the phone and do it from long distance, this is just not true. I don't know why people, when they hear subject matter like this, or whether it's extraterrestrials, whatever, everybody's got a story. This is serious business, and your listeners need to know this because you're in multiple countries, you know, that this program goes out to. Exorcisms are real, but it's a very, very specialized field. And the reason why people turn to Catholics, your guest Bob said that there is in America, every diocese, and this is a fact, has to have at least within a diocese. That's not an individual parish. You know, it's the whole Diocese. Are you there? Did I lose
yes.
you? Yes.
No, I'm here with you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought I lost you. I heard something on the phone. They have to have an exorcist. And so what Bob was saying to you, what does the Catholic Church know that other people don't know? Even though when the son was asked, when is the end of the world, and he said only the Father knows the day and the time. Only the Father does know the day and the time, but as we get nearer, Bob made a very important point. As we get closer to the end, there will be more manifestations. So people need to know what to do, and you cannot self-exercise. This is not something to be played around with, you know, with these people calling in. You can't just invoke God's name or do this or do that, because if that spirit takes you over, there's no getting out of hell. You know, when there's the second coming, people, there's no get out of hell card type of thing. You don't play around with this stuff. People need to take this very, very seriously.
I agree. And that's why I asked him, do you think that because you're a lay exorcist and you're doing it over the phone, is that why it took you 7 years to fight through this exorcism? And I do think that people need to be careful with what they're doing. But in most things, it's caveat emptor, right? Let the buyer beware. If you're going to go get help, I don't know that I'm going to take help from somebody over the phone if I can't get help. And again, where do we draw the line? Unfortunately, Dana, there are a lot of religions and a lot of different priests, pastors, ministers who are not trained in dealing with any of this, and
exactly. They
deflect and they will tell you. We've had many of them on our show on Darkness Radio that say they're just not prepared. They're good-hearted. They love their people and their congregation, and they can go do prayers and blessings for a house, but they're not prepared when things go off the rails and they are facing a dark negative energy. And that's why you have to do your research.
Exactly, and I'm glad you questioned that guy when you said that to that man named Michael, because I have never in my life heard of anything like this, that doing exorcisms from a distance or being a lay exorcist. There, like I said, there are priests. There's hierarchy in our church, just like in most organized religions. There are cardinals which answer directly to the Pope. They're not even equipped to do this. This is very sad. You're messing with Satan and his minions. You don't play with that. They play for keeps. And people don't realize that, whether it's Ouija boards or nice spirits, they think they're fun spirits or they're just lost or whatever. You don't play around with stuff that you don't understand. This is serious business.
I agree. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's go to Wildcard Line. John in Nashville, welcome to the show. What did you want to say this evening?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to share an experience as a child of about 6. I remember living in a house where my mother complained about the room that she slept in. And I just vaguely remember she saying that there was a demon, a small thing that she would wake up and see lying on the ceiling, and it would be staring at her and taunting her. And even I think one time she said it tried to choke her. And, you know, I was a kid. Later, I guess about 15 years later, you know, my mother's always been in the church and everything. We had some new church members that come, and they were sharing a dinner with us. And it just so happened they lived in that very house that we had when I was a child. And I can remember never being comfortable in that house. I didn't experience what she did, but I do remember being very uncomfortable in the house. And they were sharing a story. These people that were now living in this home said that they had a 3-year-old daughter who slept in the room where my mother used to sleep. And the child was crying one night, and the mother went to check on the child. And she said that the child said, "Make it go away." And, you know, of course, the mother said, "Well, what do you want me to make go away?" And she pointed to the ceiling and said that there was something scary on the ceiling. And it was just kind of eerie to be sitting there and hearing this, you know, so many years later, that they were experiencing the same thing in that house. And as an adult, I personally do not subscribe to religion. I do, however, think that there is an energy about us, and I do believe in the paranormal and the supernatural. And I do believe we have an energy that moves on or doesn't move on. And so, you know, you were talking about haunted houses, and this was something that was real to me. And even to this day, you know, I don't subscribe to a lot of the things that other people do, but I do believe there is a spiritual side to us. And, you know, it was sort of validated in my mind as I think I was probably maybe 20 by then, 21. And to hear this come from them, it brought it all back from my childhood. And I was like, yeah, I remember that. I remember that room. I remember that feeling that, you know, when in that house, even as a six-year-old. And so, you know, it sort of kind of validated my mother to hear that someone else was experiencing the same thing in the same room in the same house. So even though I'm not a religious person, I don't think I would move into a house, and I have children. And it was just really weird hearing it from someone else other than, you know, stories I heard as a child from my mother.
Right, when you get confirmation from an outside source that's not just somebody that you know that might be pulling your chain or trying to scare you, keep you in bed. Yeah, it's always intriguing when you can actually have somebody corroborate the information in the stories.
Fascinating, yeah, exactly. And, you know, you were talking about movies also that I remember as a child watching in that very house, as a matter of fact, the original version of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. And I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes.
But the early version of it just terrified me, and I couldn't look under beds, and I couldn't look in closets, and I just remember being very frightened until about the age of 12 or 13 when I started feeling like I was a tough guy, you know. And then, but I can remember as a child just really being afraid of that movie. And so, I just wanted to share that even though you don't necessarily have to believe something for it to be there, and I'm not a religious person, but I got to tell you, you know, it was really eerie hearing it from someone other than mom that this, you know, happened to them as well.
Well, thank you for listening this evening and calling in with your story. Let's go to the first time caller line, Colleen in Fort Lauderdale. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. I do appreciate it. I do want to agree with one of your previous callers regarding the caller, Michael. He is absolutely incorrect. The rite of exorcism is just that, a rite, and you must be an ordained priest, and then there is specialized training, approval, et cetera, that must happen. I'm wondering if the so-called high-up Catholic priests he was speaking with were Novus Ordo. You know, I'm an Irish Roman Tridentine Catholic, so unfortunately grew up very much well-versed at. Now, to your question whether or not a person with children would willingly move into a home that they believe to be haunted, I don't believe in hauntings. I believe in possession. If I were to gain knowledge that a home I was looking at was, heck no. You don't put children in that position. Absolutely not. The home I'm actually living in now has actually been blessed by a Catholic church, so I do know the inside is safe, but very strange thing, it's been happening for the past year and a half. A couple nights a week at about 3 to 3:30 in the morning, I'll hear something tapping at my window. It's not a branch, it's too rhythmic to be anything other than an actual deliberate knock. You go outside to see what's there, nothing's there. Told everybody about it. They thought it was my imagination until my fiance actually returned home from a brief stint up north taking care of his father and some family business. I told him about it. One night he was laying in bed with me. He heard it too. So he goes out to check, weirdest thing in the world. And it's just very strange. So while I think there may be some force outside trying to possess, I'm pretty safe inside the house, so I'll just stay in here late at night. So, but thank you very much for having me and allowing me to state my piece and keep up the great work with the show.
Thank you very much, Colleen. We appreciate you chiming in on that. Let's grab one more call. We'll go east of the Rockies. Linda in Virginia staying up very late with us. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you this evening?
We are doing well. We've got about 2.5 minutes left with you, Linda. What did you want to weigh in on?
Well, I want to briefly tell you, I have a home down in Texas, and I had activity in it when I lived in it, and I think probably the worst that happened to me was I would wake up with scratches on me. And fortunately, as time went on, I was able to get out of that house, which was a relief, but I moved across the street. So when I went to rent the house, I rented it to a young woman with two boys, And I didn't disclose to her the problems we were having in the house. You know, other than me waking up with scratches, it was stuff being moved, and I didn't want to feed into anything, thinking maybe it was just us, you know, whatever. So she moved in the house, and she'd lived in the house probably approximately 3 or 4 months, and she called me up one day and asked to speak to me, and she asked me what was going on in the house. And I asked her, I said, well, what do you mean? You know, just kind of played it off, you know.
Right.
And she had woke up. She was taking a nap. Her two little boys were in daycare. And she woke up to, she felt like a child laying next to her. And it, you know how at the back of your neck, if you pulled, you know, just that hair on the, just right up there underneath your neck,
right.
Your hairline. She could feel little fingers pulling the hair. And she said she was frozen. And so it's almost like paralyzation. And she finally got up the nerve to say, who are you? And this child voice said, tried to mimic her son's name, but it was like it was learning how to talk. And so she said once it said that, she got up and ran out of the house, and that's when she came over and saw me. Well, a few months later, again, she had another incident where she felt, she heard a little boy say, Mommy, me sleep with you. And she knew it wasn't her kids. Her kids weren't home. And she felt this body, little body move up next to her. And she was laying on her side, and she could feel like, you know, if you take your arm and put your arm, you know, up over her arm, and with her free arm, she reached up there, and she could feel an arm.
Wow, she could actually feel a physical form.
Yeah, and so, again, she ran out of, she said once that paralyzation removed, she got out of the house. So, as time went on, she one night was doing laundry, and she went to the washer and the dryer next to each other, and as she went to put the clothes from the washer into the dryer, something, like, pushed her, and she fell on a pile of clothes that was on the floor in front of that dryer.
Wow, now that is an active spot. Thank you so much for calling in. I want to thank my guest, Bob Cranmer, for the night, the Demon of Brownsville Road. I want to thank producers Dan Galanti, Jonathan Howell, Lisa Lyon, and engineer Tim Dennis. Remember to listen to darknessradio.com Monday through Friday, 9 to midnight. Thank you to George Norrie for letting me fill in on Coast to Coast AM.